All right. Good morning, Garden City. Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for being here. I'm just curious, for my own curiosity's sake, how many were around the vicinity of the marathon yesterday? Anybody? Yeah, some. Super cool day. Like one of the, like Porch Rocker is one of those cool days to be in Akron. The marathon, incredible, just like fun. We had some good representation from Garden City. We had some half. I know we had one full marathoner. We had lots of people doing relays, and we had one like official Garden City relay team. And so fun. I'm not gonna give a pitch right now that like you need to run in some facet of the marathon next year. That's gonna come when we get into the new year. Just prepare yourself that's gonna come. But so. Our Garden City relay team, five of us ran. I got to do the final leg. And just want to say, if anybody here thrives on encouragement, like if you love being encouraged by people, then running the marathon is like the thing that you have to do. Because like it's everybody is cheering for you for like miles and miles. And it's like it's so fun. Coolest thing I saw yesterday, I think. Well, actually, there's a cool thing that I can't share with you, which is weird that I would say that. But the coolest funny thing that I saw was a woman probably in her late 50s who ran the full marathon, and right next to her was her companion, which was her dog, and her dog had a backpack on that had like a sleeve of drinks all around the dog. So she had her pack mule in the form of her dog that was trotting next to her, and apparently anytime she just needed a drink, just reached down. And so the dog was serving her well. What else happened? There's a couple things I was going to say. Anyway, awesome time at the marathon. And so if you ran in any part of the marathon, can you just put your hand up? A couple here. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, you can give a hand for that. Super fun. But yeah, so just to prepare you, in 2025, we're kind of like getting geared up for where we're going in 25. For some of you, we are going to highly encourage you to start planning to put the next Akron Marathon date on your calendar and then start in early 25 to start doing some activities that would prepare you to actually join in and be a part of it. So more to come on that. Also, just wanted to say before we really jump in, this is just totally random but fun, I think. This summer, I grew some hot peppers. This is a Carolina Reaper. Anybody ever heard of a Carolina Reaper? This is, at one time it was the hottest pepper in the world. Now I think it's like three, maybe, in the world. And it's just a nasty looking thing. And, on Friday I had a bowl of soup and I cut up about a third of a Reaper and I chopped it up real fine and I put it in. And it was horrible. It ruined the soup and it was a mess. I ate a third of it and then threw the rest of it away. So anyway, I just wanted to invite one of you into the mess that I experienced on Friday. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to leave this right here. And then at any time, you could come get it now, or you could come get it at the end of service, maybe come down like you're going to pray, like maybe like you're being moved in the direction of the altar. You could just come down, kneel down, grab it, and then go back to your seat. However you want to get it, it's there. I just think there's one of you here that either wants to try it or maybe you have someone that you're not happy with and you just want to mess with them and have them over for dinner and put it in their soup. Anyway, that's up to you. Whatever you do with it is totally on you and your conscience. But I got one per service, so it is there. And just be warned that it is packing a lot of heat. Okay, so. But I'm serious. That is for one of you to take home and do whatever you want to do with it. Okay, so we are going to continue in our series entitled 4D. And we're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 this morning. Actually, same verses that we were in last week, but for a different reason. And so if you want to turn there, you can go ahead and turn. But we've talked about the gospel. We've talked about the kingdom. This morning, we're going to add in the third level that the Lord invites us into, and here's how I want to set it up. So we talked about the gospel, the good news that Jesus has come to save sinners, and the good news is that the gospel is in God's design. It's like spreading everywhere, right? And then the next level was it's not just the good news that Jesus has come to save sinners, but the next level that He invites us into is the kingdom of God. And the idea there is that Jesus, who is the king, he wants his rule and reign to permeate and fill all of the earth, right? So the gospel is spreading. That's God's design. The kingdom, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That is also God's design. And those are two exciting things. The message that Jesus doesn't hate us and is angry at us and wants to crush us. No, the good news is he's come to rescue us. That's exciting, right? The good news that King Jesus, who is awesome, wants his goodness and mercy and love and wisdom to fill all of our hearts and all of our lives, societies and countries and all things, like that is exciting news. But now, well, what I want to talk about this morning is the question, how? How does the gospel message get spread, and how does thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven? How does that happen? Now, if you were to ask me that question, how does that happen? If you were to ask me that 30 years ago, maybe even 25 years ago, here's maybe what I would say. Well, this would be my best guess. How does the gospel get spread and the kingship of Jesus get more pronounced, the kingdom of God come? I would say this, that my role in that was I pray and then I tell God what he should do and then God does it. Or to put it in like an American business context, it would be like I was the consultant and God needed me to tell him what he should do on earth because I had ideas on what would really be good here. And then I would tell him, and then I would just sit back on the couch and like put my feet up, right? Because now I've done my job. I've consulted. I've prayed, God, you should think about doing this. And then I sit back and then, well, God maybe does it. Maybe he doesn't do it, but that's on him to do the work. And that's kind of how I saw things for a number of years. Now, if you were to fast forward, like 25 years later, I'm in a different place now regarding how the gospel spreads and how I believe the kingship of Jesus comes on earth. And here's how I would phrase it now. And I might be in a little slightly different place in 20 more years because we should always be growing and learning and maturing. But here's where I'm at now. Instead of seeing myself as a consultant that tells God what he should do, and then I sit back and just watch. Instead of that, here's how it happens. The gospel spreading and the kingdom come. Number one, God and I commune together. I abide in the vine as a branch. I connect to him and just intimately connect. And then from there, what he does is a lot of things, but he heals the broken places in me and he makes me whole or more whole than I was, and he heals me more than I was, and that's a progressive thing. And then as he heals me and wholes me, then something really cool happens is that like we kind of get aligned. I align with him and I start to see things more as he sees him, and I think about things more as he thinks about them. Or as the Apostle Paul would say, you kind of keep in step with the Spirit because you're getting aligned with him and who he is and what he's about. And then from that place, then what happens when you're aligned and healed and whole and on that journey is now we can get to the place where we actually can co-labor with God to see the good news message of Jesus go everywhere and to see his rule and reign become more pronounced and felt in the real world. There's a co-laboring where it's not just me saying, God, you do that, and I sit back. Now it's, oh God, we're walking together. I have a sense for what you're doing. Now let's do this together, because he invites us in to join him in the things that he is doing. Or to put it this way, how does the gospel get spread and the kingdom grow? If you were to think about it in terms of tennis, I used to think that God was a singles tennis player out there on the court and he was doing his thing and I was just in the stands watching, and I'd be like, hey God, hit a forehand, or hey God, you should have slice serve on this one. Like I'm consulting with him, but he's doing all the playing. Now what I see is, no, it's not me watching God play singles tennis. Now, no, it's God and I playing doubles together, and he makes us a team and we co-labor in the work together. And the same is true for each of us. But the idea here is that we, you and I, are very much central in terms of how God works in the world to spread the message of the gospel and to see his kingship rule and reign experienced more on earth as in heaven. We are a core central part of what and how he does. Okay, so now I want us to go back to 1 Corinthians 3, and I want us to just look at this real quick. And then I'll tell you, like, we talked about gospel, we talked about kingdom, he's inviting us into both. There's a third thing that he's inviting us into this morning, and we'll get to it, but we gotta read a couple verses we read last week, but we're gonna pull some different things out. Okay, so remember, Paul, 1 Corinthians 3, talking about divisions in the church, right? There's all these divisions. But in this, Paul illuminates us to some really important things that we need to catch. So, 1 Corinthians 3, and then starting in verse 6, Paul says this. Paul says, I, Paul, planted, that's what I did. And then he says, Apollos watered, that's what he did, but God gave the growth. All right, and I'm just remind us here, Paul doesn't say, I, Paul, watched God do all the planting. I said, God, you should plant, and then God planted. And then Apollos said, oh, God, you should water. And then Apollos sat back and watched God water. He said, no, God and I planted among you, and then God and Apollos watered among you. It's doubles tennis here, co-laboring. But the idea here is that Paul planted and Apollos watered. And we said this last week, like those are two distinctly different activities. To plant seeds is one variety of work. To water seedlings is a whole different kind of work. Both work. They're both co-laboring with God who gives the growth. But Paul is doing one thing and Apollos is specializing in doing another thing here in the church in Corinth. Right? Which now brings us to the third level that the Lord invites us into regarding how he is discipling us and calling us to join him. And it's the Latin word vocare. We translate as vocation. But vocare in the Latin means to call. And the idea behind that is this, that God calls us, or to put it a different way, he invites us to join him in what he is doing on earth in unique ways, because he is all made and he's designed and gifted us uniquely and differently from everybody else. And because he made us differently, he invites each of us to join him in the work that he's doing in different things. Paul plants, Apollos waters, each of them received their invitation to join God in his work in a way that was unique to them. And so what I want us to see here is that Paul was very clear on what his invitation from Jesus was. He knew what God was about in the world. He had a clear sense of that, but he also had a clear sense for how God was inviting him to join in the work that God was doing, right? I want us to turn back to Romans chapter 15. Romans 15 verse 20, Paul says this. Paul says, and thus I, Paul, writing to a different church in Rome, he says, I make it my ambition to preach the gospel, not where Christ has already been named, lest I would be building on someone else's foundation. Right, that's pretty clear. Right, God's doing a lot of things in the world, and Paul says, here's what I know Jesus has invited me into in terms of how he wants me to join him in the doubles tennis match, the co-laboring with God in the world. Paul says, and thus I make it my ambition to preach the gospel, not where Jesus has already been named or known, lest I would be building on someone else's foundation. Very interesting. So Paul knows at the bottom of his heart that there's a bunch of people out there who have never heard of Jesus before. And God's heart is to spread the good news message of Jesus among them and to start kingdom work in their midst. And Paul says, that's what Jesus invites me into. Now, there's all kinds of churches that are already established. There's fledgling bodies of believers in various cities. And Paul knows that's not what Jesus is inviting me in to. There's other people, other disciples, right, that Jesus walked with who went to various places in the world. And the gospel was preached and the kingdom is growing and churches have been established. And Paul knows I'm not supposed to go to the place where John planted a church. And Thomas, he's doing a thing over there and I could be useful probably in some way, but I know God is not inviting me to go to the place where Thomas is already working because Jesus is known and named there. Paul knows my calling, my invitation is to go to places where Jesus hasn't been heard of nor preached about yet. And it's clear there from the verses in Corinthians 3 that while Paul knows that's what he's supposed to do, go to the unreached peoples, Apollos, he's got a different invitation from Jesus on him. Right? We know from some other verses in the New Testament that Apollos was like a really gifted teacher. Like Apollos is a boss, like he understands the Old Testament as Paul did, but Apollos has got a gifting to be able to explain things to already established believers in a way that just brings it alive. And so while Paul is invited by Jesus to join in the work of going to unreached peoples, Apollos, his call is to go to places where churches have already been established and come alongside them and speak life and wisdom and teaching into them. And Apollos knows that. And that's exactly what happened here in Corinth. Paul went there. They had not heard about Jesus. They're unreached. So Paul's like, let me in. Let me at them. That's my invitation with Jesus to go to the unreached. Paul goes to Corinth. He preaches the gospel. Some begin to believe. They start meeting together. This work begins. A church forms. And at that point, Paul says, I got to go somewhere else. Because officially now we can check the box. Corinth is reached, which means I got to go somewhere else. Right? But then after Paul goes somewhere else, then Apollos is like, whoa, there's a fledgling work in Corinth. That's my calling card. They need deeper teaching. They need someone to come alongside them. So Apollos then comes in, right? Each knows what they're supposed to do. Now, here I want to be clear on this. What Paul is not saying in Romans 15 when he says, I've been called to the unreached, I do not want to go and preach the gospel in a place where Jesus is already known. Paul isn't saying that those that do that are doing lesser work than he is doing. Paul is not in a sideways, sinister kind of way saying Apollos is less than me because, right, I came in and nobody knew Jesus. I did the really hard work and Apollos is doing the easy work. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying that I, Paul, am better than Apollos because my calling is to go preach to the unreached and Apollos is coming in after people like me and doing the easier stuff. That's not what he is saying. What he is saying and being very clear with is, I, Paul, I know what I have been invited by Jesus into. And that's what I do. And Apollos, he knows what he has been invited by Jesus to do and he is doing that. And then here's the idea. As Paul does what he has been invited by Jesus to do, and as Apollos does what he has been invited by Jesus to do, and as we all do what Jesus invites us uniquely and differently to do, as we all do that, then what happens is the gospel message spreads out and Jesus' rule and reign becomes more and more pronounced. As we walk in our vocations, our unique invitations from Jesus to join him in what he is doing. Now, let's flesh that out just a little bit. Speaking of the different labors or the different things that Jesus invites us into, go to Romans chapter 12 if you're following along. Just want to read some verses here. Romans 12, starting in verse 4, right? We're going to get some insight into this vocare idea, an invitation from Jesus for each of us to join him in unique and different work. Paul says this, Romans 12, verse 4. Paul says, for as in one body, right, he's speaking to church in Rome. Actually, there's probably various churches that will be reading this. For as in one church body, for as in one physical body, we have many members or many different parts. And these members in the parts, or these organs, as we would say, do not all have the same function. So we, individual followers of Jesus, though we are many individually, we are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. And then he says this, having gifts that different according to the grace that's given to us. And he says, let us use them. Meaning, whatever invitation Jesus gives you to join him in his work on earth as in heaven, he says, all right, you've been given those gifts, therefore let us use them. Let us employ them and put them into action. And now here's where he gets specific about the different kinds of things that Jesus will invite us into. And this list is not exhaustive. There's other lists in the New Testament, and there's different things on these different lists. But the idea here is that we've been invited into different things. Here's what Paul says. If Jesus has given you the gift of prophecy, then use it in proportion to your faith. If service, then use that in our serving. The one who teaches, right, if you've been gifted as one like Apollos, who's a good teacher, then use the gifting in what? In your teaching. And the one who exhorts, you use the gift of exhortation. Paul's being very clear here. To the one who exhorts, use that gift in your exhortation, right? He's being very clear. To the one who contributes, that's your gift, like to give generously, then give in generosity. To the one who's been called to lead, lead with zeal. To the one who does acts of mercy, do those acts of mercy with cheerfulness. A whole bunch of different giftings that Jesus puts in individuals for the sake of them being designed uniquely and magnificently to do different things, so that each of us can hear Jesus inviting us into co-laboring with him regarding those specific things. Prophecy, leadership, encouragement, mercy, all the things. Whatever your thing is, do that thing in the midst of the body and in the world, and the gospel will spread and the kingdom will come. I think it was about 25 years ago now. I'm dating myself. There was an author by the name of Marcus Buckingham who wrote a book called Now Discover Your Strengths. Anybody ever heard of that before? It was like real big in the business world, and he was like on the, the business speaker tour. And I had the opportunity to hear him speak one time. And I think it's what he spoke really essentially is what the Apostle Paul was writing 2,000 years earlier. But I'm going to give it to you through the lens of American business, and then we'll bring it back to the New Testament in our lives. But here's an illustration that I don't know if it's in his book or if I heard him speak this, but it's from him, and it's brilliant. He said this. Imagine you're back in school. You're in elementary school, and your report card comes out. And on your report card, here's what you got. Like it or not, you got three B's, you got an A+, and then you got a D-. Okay. Now, when you walk out of your classroom and get on the bus or walk, however you get home and you show your report card to your parents, what's coming next? Right? And the answer is we all know what is coming next. Because this is what we do culturally and societally, right? I'm not maligning each of us as parents. I'm just saying this is how we approach life. Every parent, like generally, this is the response. Oh, we're going to look, okay, A+, okay, three B's, great, D-. Let's focus our attention on the D-. Okay, now here's what we're going to do. We're going to develop a strategy with the young person that got the D-, and then here's what we're going to do. For the next 6 months, we are going to spend extra time every day on the D-minus subject. right? 45 minutes of extra work every day on the D minus. And then over summer, like if you're able as a family, we're going to hire ourselves a tutor and we're going to get some special extra tutoring for that student in the D minus topic. And then we're going to get some books, like every birthday and Christmas, we're going to buy books and resources on the D minus topic. And we're just going to cram whatever that D minus you got, whatever topic that was in school, we're going to cram that subject into you, because what we think needs to happen with that report card moving forward is we need to elevate that D minus and we need to get that up. That's where we focus our energy and our attention and our labors. And Marcus Buckingham just made the comment, like, why is it that as Americans, we think whatever we're the worst at, that's where we need to devote the majority of our attention and energy. And what Marcus Buckingham came on the scene and said is that is absolutely ridiculous. And here's where he goes with it. He says, let's go back to the report card analogy again for a second, right? You get your three B's, your D minus, and your A plus. Here, Marcus Buckingham was advocating for a different approach when you walk home and give your report card to your parents. Here's what he said. He said, I wish this is what would happen. He says, I wish that when we gave that report card to our parents would say, okay, D minus, I see that. Yep, I know you've always struggled in that subject. I get it. Three B's, cool. Good work there. A plus. Yeah, A plus. Good for you. You clearly were rocking that subject, right? And then, like, instead of focusing on the D minus in that topic or that subject in school, the parent then says, like, hey, buddy, hey, young lady, like, what is it about this that you just love? Because, like, clearly you're crushing it in this subject. And, like, typically, like, if you're going to talk about the D minus subject, like, there's probably very little interest in the child's heart for that, so the conversation is going to be lame. But when you talk about the A plus subject, the kid's like, oh man, we did this in class and we're learning that and we're doing this, right? And he says, a good parent, right? I'm not condemning or criticizing any of us, right? But he says, what I would love to see is parents who focus on the A plus subject with their kids. And now regarding moving forward for the next 6 months with extra time spent every day, encourage your little one to spend more time, 45 minutes a day on the A plus subject. If you're going to hire in some outside tutoring, get some outside tutoring in the A plus subject. And if you have money to send your kid to a camp over the summer, that's like a specialized skill sort of thing, send them to a camp that's about the A plus subject. Here's why. Here's what Marcus Buckingham says. Because he says, in the future, from where is your child's greatest contribution to the world going to come? Is their greatest contribution to the world going to come in the subject matter of their D minus subject? Or is their greatest contribution going to come through the avenue of their A plus subject? It's a very interesting question. And I think, I just have a sense that generally, the general pattern would be that the things that we are drawn to, that we gravitate towards, that our mind loves to dig into, that come naturally to us, those are going to be the areas that we're going to have the most pronounced blessing and benefit flowing from God through us to the world. So why not focus on our strengths and then manage our weaknesses? But not focus all of our energy and attention on making our weaknesses somehow a strength when they're never probably going to be a strength. I could spend the rest of my life devoting myself to becoming an engineer, a mathematics and science proficient individual. And maybe I could make it my goal to get an engineering job somewhere in Akron. And if I committed to that, maybe there's a chance I could graduate engineering school. Maybe not. But let's say maybe there's a chance. And let's say maybe I graduate and maybe I get a job, right? I'm still at best going to be a mediocre engineer. Why? Because my brain isn't geared for that. And it doesn't mean that engineers are less. It just means that God gifted them beautifully in a different way than me. And so it's probably best for me to hear the invitation of Jesus. For me, it's not into the engineering realm, as necessary and good as that is. For me, I needed to follow Jesus into a different area because my A plus is not mathematics. Right? Does that make sense? Right? That's exactly, I think, what Paul is driving at here. That we would spend our time doing what we are awesome at. And when all of us, think about it, when we all do what we are A plus at, and when we get better at doing those things, does not the kingdom of God get more powerful and more efficient in its movement on earth as in heaven? I planted, Apollos watered. Paul says, I plant like a boss. I don't water too well. I planted like a boss. Apollos doesn't plant super well. He's talking over people's heads when they don't know anything about Jesus. But man, when it's time to water, brother's A plus. He's good at it. So send him in. Send him in when the watering's necessary, right? When Paul and Apollos do what they are A plus at, it just seems like the kingdom can move in a more pronounced way. Right? Back to 1 Corinthians 3. Paul says this, according to the grace of God given to me, which is different than the grace that God, similar, we're covered by Jesus, but in terms of giftings, the grace God gave me as a master builder, different than Apollos, is the waterer. According to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation. Because that's what Paul loves to do. There's no foundation there. You got to clear the land. Paul's like, send me in. I laid a foundation. And now in Corinth, he says, and someone else is building upon it. Praise God that Apollos is there to build upon the foundation that I laid. We're on the same team. He says, let each one of us take care how he builds upon it. Do what Jesus is inviting you to do. And let us protect ourselves and protect others from trying to do lots of things that Jesus isn't inviting us into. Vocation, our calling, an invitation from Jesus to join him. One last thing. I just want to be really clear on this, and I think this might help. It was years ago, I had the opportunity to get to know an Iranian young man who was studying in America. And we met, and we would hang out, and we would talk. And the first time we met, here's the story that he told me. He said he was in Iran. He was a devoted Muslim, as most people in Iran are, many are. And he accounted to me, there was one day, and he said, Brian, I do not know if I was awake or if I was asleep. I could not tell. But he said, I had this vision where Jesus showed up in, like, he was with me. And then as he described what he saw and what he felt, I had goosebumps. It was like he was teleporting me into the experience with him, because in the same way that he described, I've never seen Jesus like that. Like Paul gets knocked off the horse and he sees Jesus like brilliantly radiating before him. He had this mingling with Jesus, but he said the love, the light, the grace, the peace, all the things that you would expect to find in the presence of Jesus, like they were his. And then Jesus revealed himself. And this is the cool thing I remember. He said, like, anytime a Muslim would have a weird vision or something, a Muslim would say something like, Allah, Allah, and then whatever the Muslim would say to honor Allah. But he said, even as a Muslim, when he had his vision of Jesus, all he could say was, Yesu, Yesu. He didn't even know that it was Jesus yet, but those are the words that came out of his mouth. And then he says, I don't know how long that vision lasted. It might have been 2 minutes. It might have been 2 hours. He does not know. But he said, in that moment, Jesus met him and he met Jesus. And then when I met him, he was running headlong into relationship with the Lord. And he found a ministry that I was leading and I got to walk with him. I actually got to baptize him in private. Just me and him in a body of water, actually in Florida, South Florida. And we did it in private because nobody could know that he got baptized, because if the people in Iran who sent him over to do schooling here, if those officials heard that he got baptized and was following Jesus, his family back home would be in deep danger, right? So everything was very secretive with him. And as I remember my time with him, everything about his story was amazing, right? It's like you could do a YouTube video on that story. You could write a book. Like, he could write a book on that story. And Christians would flock to that and say, "Yay, God! Yay, God! That is so awesome." And I say, "Yay, God! That is so awesome," right? The idea here is that God did all of the work with this young man. Oh, like when Jesus shows up in a vision, like, there's nobody else who is playing doubles tennis with Jesus to make that happen. Jesus showed up as a singles player in his vicinity and changed his life, right? And I think we hear stories like that, and then our next assumption is, all right, now Jesus, if that's how you roll, I'm going to go ahead and sit back on the couch, and I'm going to consult, and I'm going to say, "Hey, Jesus, you should do that with this person at work that I know. You should do that with this political leader. You should do that with my favorite singer who I really like. Jesus, you do that, because you're the singles tennis player. You're the one who labors and reaches people. I'm just going to sit back and do nothing," right? The danger in hearing that story is that that's what we tend to think. But now here's the point I want to make. And the Iran as a country, and I don't know if he's in Iran or if he's still here. I don't know. I've lost touch with him. But Iran as a country is still a tragic mess. Iran is a culture and civilization. Like, there's some great people there. Persia's got a storied history. The modern Iranian regime, very different, very dark. Iran is not thriving right now. The kingdom of Jesus is not fully pronounced and felt there. This is a cool singular story of God reaching a person, an Iranian, but by and large, Iran is still a mess. But now contrast Iran with a different country. We'll call it Papua New Guinea. Papua New Guinea, I just hopped on last night to make sure I got my statistics right. Papua New Guinea is 96% professing Christians. 50 years ago, 0%. Zero. The tribes people, Papua New Guinea is an island in Indonesia, very remote. The tribal people there were very warlike, very violent. There was a lot of cannibalistic activity among these people, like, just living essentially like 3,000 years ago. Not that we don't, our goal is not to get people to live in a modern way, but they in so many ways were living in deep darkness. Like, yeah, just a dysfunctional environment. And then what happened is that there were some people who had a clear sense that Jesus was inviting them to go to these tribes people in Papua New Guinea, because no foundation had been laid there, and they felt like God was inviting them to lay a foundation. And so they started going in and ministering among these tribes. And then, like, the gospel began to take hold in a couple different villages in Papua. It's a large geographic landmass, and the tribes are all very remote and very separate and very warlike with one another. But the message of Jesus and his saving of us started to percolate out and spread. And then the kingdom of Jesus started to come in pronounced ways in these villages. And then, like, more Christians would come in, like, the foundation layers came in and Jesus gets known. And then the teachers come in and the waterers, the Apolloses come in. And then, like, churches start to spring up, and then people come over who have, like, business vocation ideas, and they start, like, building schools and starting businesses. And, like, what happened is, like, as Christians co-labored with God in Papua New Guinea, like, the rule and reign of Jesus started to flood like a tidal wave over these people. And where there were zero believers 50 years ago, now, because of the co-laboring of people walking in their unique invitations to join Jesus in doing work with him, Papua New Guinea looks very different than Iran does. But my point is, what we often celebrate as Christians is we celebrate the Iranian guy who is a Muslim, who Jesus, 100% all Jesus, Jesus does all the work, Jesus saves this guy, and it's a miracle and it's beautiful that Jesus did that. But Iran is still a dysfunctional mess.
But where we co-labor with Jesus in a place like Papua New Guinea, wow, things really change all the way down to the fiber of how people treat each other. And almost 100% of them are following Jesus, not because they're coerced to, but because the kingdom of Jesus is so pronounced and felt that it is unmistakable that we need to follow him. Where people work with Jesus, that's his design. And where we work in the areas of our A plus, because he's gifted us in certain things, the gospel message spreads and the kingdom comes powerfully. And it changes everything. Worship team, come on back up. So I guess the question is, as we move from the gospel to the kingdom, now into this invitation to join Jesus in working in the world in our area of unique vocare, is it possible for us to get as clear on what the Lord is inviting us into as Paul was clear on what Jesus was inviting him into, so that we can just spend a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of effort. Actually, it's the Spirit of God's effort, but to spend that in the areas where we're just really good. And where Paul does his thing, and Apollos does his, and Kemp does his, and Jasmine does hers, and Sapphire does hers, and Brian does his, and we all do ours. In a certain period of time, we got a Papua New Guinea on our hands. Instead of just sitting back and saying, all right, Jesus, I just can't wait to watch you save one more Iranian. And those are cool stories. But that's not how he chooses to move on the earth. Primarily, it's an invitation to join. It's a call to vocation. So we're going to sing and we're going to worship. I'm going to pray over us. Father in heaven, Paul is not here and Apollos is not here. But that's okay. They ran their race and they finished their course. And we don't need them here, but we do need Scott, and we need Matt, and we need Zach, and we need Kelly, and we need Misty. That's what we need, and that's who you've provided. And so, Father, thank you for the giftings that you have already so generously poured out here among us. There is no lacking in the room. There's no lacking in the body here. But what we are asking of you and what we need of you is that you would empower and come alongside and animate us to join you in what you are inviting us to join you in. Both in this church body and in the world where your kingdom is breaking out. And Father, I pray that as we set our attention on you, that you would heal and whole us, that you would commune with us and allow us to commune with you, and that you would link us in step with you and just give us, God, both now as we sing and in the week to come, a clearer sense for what it is that you're inviting each of us into, to join you in doing your work on earth as in heaven, doubles tennis. And everybody wins when we do that. And we know that your heart is to see everybody win. Your heart is to see Papua New Guinea happen. And so, Father, to that end, we humble ourselves and we invite you to move in us. Would you help us to join you well? And then we look forward to seeing what it is that you put together and how you move it forward. In Jesus' name, amen.